This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Good afternoon. This is Dr. Everett Piper sitting in for Tony Perkins this afternoon on Washington Watch. Welcome aboard. We've got a great show for you this afternoon. I'm going to give you an overview of it in just a second, but some housekeeping first. Remember that the call-in number is 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. We'll definitely be taking your calls today, and most assuredly as we go into the second half of the hour. Again, I'm Everett Piper. I serve as president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University in Bartlesville, Oklahoma, and I'm honored to sit in for Tony periodically when he's out of town on vacation or perhaps on other business. If you want to follow Tony on Twitter, his Twitter handle is at T Perkins. And the website, if you want to follow that for Family Research Council, is frc.org. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it's Dr. Everett Piper. That's DREVERETTPIPER. That's my Twitter handle. And the website for me is at Oklahoma Wesleyan University. That's www.okwu.com. OKWU.edu. That's OKWU.edu. Well, today, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about bathroom bills. We are going to talk about Rachel Maddow on MSNBC. We are going to talk about the campus snowflake rebellion and the loss of academic freedom and classical liberalism on so many of our campuses across the land. There's hardly a day that goes by where you don't see the snowflakes crying in the streets, wringing their hands because somebody has threatened them with an unwanted idea. So first up today, we have Jonathan Sayens. I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly. We'll have him correct me in a second here if I'm off. Jonathan Sayens. He's the president of Texas Values. The topic is the gender bathroom bill that just went through the Texas Senate by a vote of 21-10, okay? And that was after full debate for the entire afternoon. The full Texas Senate approved the Texas Privacy Act. That's the title of the bill, SB 6, which stands to protect, get this, the privacy, dignity, and safety of women and children in the Lone Star State, in public school locker rooms, and in public school restrooms. With us now is Jonathan Sayens, president of the Texas Values, a nonprofit organization dedicated to standing for faith, family, and freedom in Texas. Jonathan, welcome to Washington Watch this afternoon.
Well, it's good to be with you, and not to be too hard on you. It's pronounced sign, like okay. A street sign.
I'm so. Sorry. I'm way off.
Don't worry about it. Now, some people in Texas know how to pronounce it, but people ask me.
I'm a bonehead from north of the Red River in Oklahoma, so you know that the reason I can't pronounce a name that's spelled S-A-E-N-Z is signs. So I deserve a little bit of forgiveness on that.
Oh, absolutely. Look, the focus here, too, though, is what happened yesterday and what was finalized today. The Texas Senate gave final passage to the Texas Privacy Act, Senate Bill 6, very common sense, balanced measure. But it's about addressing and responding to what we've seen at the federal government level. We've seen it in local school districts and cities in the state of Texas, because there's been an effort for a number of years to try to change how we handle these type of issues, right? And so people have tried to pass local ordinances. Obama's administration, DOJ, and Department of Education pushed a letter out that would have forced all public schools, not just in Texas, but we have 1,200 school districts in Texas, but across the country, to allow boys in the girls' bathrooms. And if not, they were going to lose federal education funding. And so, but look, states have banded together. 13 states sued the federal government on that issue that Texas led, and we won in court on that. And then Trump rescinded the issue and said, we're not going to do this. The states need to handle this issue. And so, but we already saw this issue exploding in Houston. They voted down an effort to allow men into women's bathrooms. And still, school districts and local governments tried to push the same policy in Fort Worth. Parents revolted, and they had Fort Worth rescinded their policy after they tried to, in secret, allow boys in the girls' bathrooms. And so, you know, the only way to handle this issue is for the state to step in with the House and Senate representing people across the state and have a consistent law across the state. And all it does is says, that you go into the bathroom that corresponds to your birth certificate. And if that doesn't work for you, there's a private bathroom you can have access to and be accommodated. If you have a young child like I do and you need to gain access to a bathroom, there's exceptions for those things if there are medical reasons. And so very balanced approach. It doesn't impact private business. Private businesses can do whatever they want. Doesn't disturb the free market. So if Target wants to allow men into girls' locker rooms and suffer their stock price and, you know, have all the negative stuff they're having, that's up to them. This bill is about public schools and about government buildings. And look, the fact of the matter is this is an issue that's been pushed by the left, or whoever you want to call folks on the other side. And so we can't just look the other way and think that there's not a problem. You know, FRC's got a great list of 21 different incidents where the wrong people have been in the bathroom and some people have been harmed, some people have been surprised. So at txvalues.org is our website. You can
say
that
again.
That information.
Say that again.
TX, like the state, txvalues.org is our website. And so, yeah, the Senate's passed it. Now we're on to the House. And so we expect the Texas House, which has almost 100 out of 150 Republicans, should be easy to get a majority.
So the House should be a foregone conclusion for you, correct?
Well, it should be. You know, so we'll see. They've got plenty of time. And so now it's up to the House to pass this. And so I think that's the thing. People need to contact their Texas House member and let them know how they feel about Senate Bill 6. We had Democrats support this in the Senate, so I don't know why all the Republicans on the House side wouldn't support it.
All right, I've got a question for you. Let's go back to North Carolina. I'll play devil's advocate for a second. You're going to have businesses leave. You're going to have the NBA boycott. You're going to have PayPal refuse to do business in the state of Texas. The governor of the state of North Carolina tried to toe the line, and he ended up losing his election because the people voted him out of office. What makes the situation in Texas different, and how do you respond to those claims?
Well, with no disrespect to my good friend John Rustin and others in North Carolina, Texas is not North Carolina. We have the 10th largest economy in the world. We have a larger economy than most countries. It's no joke when we say it's like a whole nother country, because it practically is. And so we're not going to let the NFL and other entities try to dictate our public policy. We're not dictating to them their public policy. The legislation respects private businesses and says that they don't have to be beholden to government policy on this. They can set any policy they want. And the fact of the matter is, in North Carolina, no businesses left North Carolina. The Lieutenant Governor Dan Forst, who won overwhelmingly, he was the one really towing the line, even though Governor McCrory was certain a part of the late support effort of House Bill 2 over there. So Dan Forst testified last week in our Senate Affairs Committee on this issue and made it very clear no businesses left North Carolina. Now, did PayPal refuse to expand by 400 jobs? Well, they say that that was what their position was, but North Carolina is adding 400 jobs a week. They are number two for business. In every county in North Carolina, tourism is up. That state is rocking it when it comes to the economy. And you might, you know, suggest that maybe that's because they're supporting privacy and safety and intimate facilities. Whatever the case may be, the economic condition in North Carolina is incredible. And so was there an initial response where there were some negative things that happened because people were getting political? Sure. Did the NCA move an event? Yeah, they moved some of their events, and when they moved them to other places, those events did terrible. When the NBA moved their All-Star game to New Orleans, they had trouble selling tickets. But let's talk about apples to apples. This issue happened in Texas when the people in Houston voted down a policy that would have allowed men into women's bathrooms. What happened? Did we lose the Super Bowl? No, we had one of the most historic Super Bowls in history. We also hosted the Final Four about 8 months after voting for a policy to keep men out of women's bathrooms, just like Senate Bill 6. And so the facts of the matter is, when this issue happened in Texas, we haven't seen that. Now, we've seen some businesses make that economic argument, but they're based on hypotheticals. And so the economy in Texas is extremely strong. And there's not any other place for them to go, because you've got about 20 different states when it comes to the public school issue that have already taken a position. They don't want boys and girls bathrooms.
You know, one of the things I like about your tone and your argument and your delivery is the confidence and the courage and the spine that you're representing. You're not being red-faced, redneck, like we all would be up here in Oklahoma, I suppose. By the way, you do know who owns the Red River, don't you? It's not Texas, it's Oklahoma. I just want you to take that home with you this afternoon.
Okay.
That borderline does not go down the center of the river. It is on your side, and we own that river. That's a sidebar. That's a conversation for... we can have it. Is that what you're saying? Anyway.
Yeah, I'm just trying to remember the last time Oklahoma football won the national championship.
Here we go. Hey, well, now you're getting personal.
I want to mention one other thing.
I was going to compliment you. Now you're getting personal. Go ahead.
Well, as far as for our Texas friends, and I know you have a national audience, we have an important event tomorrow where we're going to highlight Senate Bill 6, the Texas Privacy Act, other faith and family measures. You know, FRC was here last week. Tomorrow is the Texas Faith and Family Day at the Texas Capitol. We're going to have events here at the Capitol all day, but there's a very important rally from noon to 1 central at the Texas Capitol. A lot of our schools are on spring break. You can come to the south steps of the Capitol at noon. There's going to be the state senator, Lois Kolkhorst, the author of the Texas Privacy Act. The father of U.S. Senator Ted Cruz, Reverend Rafael Cruz, is going to give an incredible speech. A lot of stuff happening from noon to 1 on the south steps of the Texas Capitol tomorrow on Thursday.
Now, again, I'm going to emphasize not only the content of what you're saying, but I'm going to call it the character, the spine, the courage, the confidence in the way you're delivering your point. People, you need to listen to this. This is a winning argument. How many times did you hear Jonathan say, should a man be allowed in a woman's restroom? That is a winning argument. Don't let people change the definition of what's really going on. I, for example, as you know, have been challenged by the Department of Education and the Office of Civil Rights to start accommodating transgenders on my campus. And I said, no, I will not dumb down the definition of a woman to nothing but a fabrication and a fantasy. Women are real. They're biological facts. And we will not give their privacy, their dignity, their locker room, their sport over to some dysphoric male that raises his hand on a given day and says, I'm a woman. We won't insult the female by doing that. We are classically feminists here because we believe in the feminine. And nobody can claim to stand for the female if they deny her existence. Jonathan, comments.
Well, Senator Lois Kolkhorst, who is a former NCAA athlete for Texas Christian University, she's the author of the Senate Bill 6, Texas Privacy Act. You know, she talked a lot about her concerns on how Title IX, that was so important for women, how that can be taken advantage of and really misused if we don't have some consistent standards in place when it comes to these issues. And we've already seen it happen. The Obama administration, not only were they a part of redefining marriage, they've tried to redefine Title IX. They didn't go through Congress. They just wrote some things up on their own. They violated the Administrative Procedures Act. And because of that, a federal judge in Texas has ruled against them and enjoined, has stopped that very dangerous letter from going into place that would have forced boys into girls' bathrooms. Not only bathrooms, showers, and locker rooms, it applied to overnight trips. So I think
Absolutely.
That when it comes to, you know, the importance of this issue for women, we've got feminist women, we've got lesbians that are saying, wait a minute, we don't agree with these type of policies that don't have consistent standards so people can decide on their own whether they want to go in one bathroom or another. And people can't simply say, hey, I'm not sure you belong in here. The other thing, too, women are saying is those that are sexual assault victims, they're saying, look, it's not just about if we get assaulted, because people say, oh, well, we have laws in place that if you assault someone in a bathroom, it's already illegal. But we don't have a state law in Texas that says that you're not allowed to be present in the bathroom that doesn't correspond to your sex. And so that was found out by the media. They were, I think, surprised to discover there's no state law that says a man just can't be in there. So sexual assault victims, women, have
bottom
said
line,
the presence of a man.
The bottom line is what you're saying is a defense of the woman. You acknowledge her identity, you acknowledge her rights, you acknowledge her privacy, and you are acknowledging that Title IX was established to give her all of those things. And how in the world can you, under the auspices of Title IX, deny the fact of the female? Jonathan, thank you for joining us on Washington Watch this afternoon. Great to have you.
God bless you. Thank you.
God bless you. Coming up next, we're going to talk about NBC and Rachel Maddow and the president's tax returns. We'll be right back after this commercial break.
From defunding Planned Parenthood to confirming a pro-life justice to serve on the Supreme Court, we're going to need your help to advocate for life in the digital sphere. Sometimes all it takes for truth to be heard is for everyday Americans to use their social media platforms to advance the pro-life cause. At Family Research Council's Pro-Life Con Digital Action Summit, a diverse group of advocates who are using the latest technologies to advance the pro-life cause helped empower viewers to better reach their community on platforms like Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and blogs. Speakers include Rebecca Buell, who was able to reverse her chemical abortion with the help of the internet, and Brandi Swindell, whose women's healthcare organization was featured in Cosmopolitan as a pro-life alternative to Planned Parenthood. Discover the amazing things digital activists are doing for life in 2017 and empower yourself and your community to do more at frc.org/prolifecon.
American Family Radio, impacting America.
Yes, my name is Marilyn from Oklahoma, and I recently ran for state representative here in the state of Oklahoma. I had a feeling or a calling that God wanted me to do that after having been a listener of Sandy Rios and Tony Perkins. They both really made an impression on my heart, and I felt that God was calling me to run, and I did. And although I lost, I felt like I was obedient to his call, and I'm not going to give up. I'm going to keep trying to fight for this state and for this country. Thank you very much for what y'all do.
Your partnership with American Family Radio keeps your family informed on the issues of the day. Join us for our 3-day share-a-thon beginning April 4th.
Hey, I'm Brant. So there's this family, Jeremy and Sharon, and a couple kids, and they're all very healthy, and they did something to save money. They switched from health insurance to MediShare, and then they had a third baby, a little girl named Anya, and she was very sick.
We've had a lot of hospital visits.
A whole week in a children's hospital, CAT scans and blood tests and chemical tests, and I think we saw a dozen doctors. It was all shared.
Yeah, the bills were shared by the other members of MediShare. That's how this works. So get this, they save hundreds a month. They don't have to deal with health insurance companies or government health care plans. And they get to be part of a community that cares.
MediShare has always been there for us and helped meet the needs that we have as a family.
It's no wonder this is growing so fast. It is worth looking into. Here's how. Call 855-PSALM-23. Now, it's available everywhere but Montana. 855-PSALM-23.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. This is Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, sitting in for Tony this afternoon. Again, the call-in number is 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. And again, if you want to follow Tony on Twitter, it's T. Perkins. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it's Dr. Everett Piper. That's DREVERETTPIPER. In this segment, we're going to talk about media bias, specifically MSNBC's Rachel Maddow, and the fact that she's getting a little criticism, and we'll find out if it's justified, for her buildup to revealing a portion of President Trump's tax information last night. And since Donald Trump was elected president, NBC has been, I would argue, relentless, some would say a tirade, to discredit or even take down President Trump. It seems that nothing he can do matters, and that there's no room for any compliment. I, for one, was critical of Donald Trump during the primary, and my attitude was, if the man does something right now, then we ought to throw him a bone and acknowledge it. That's what honest people do, even if they disagree with someone, is you acknowledge their successes, and if they do have objective failures, then point them out, but you don't make up the news, and you don't exaggerate the facts. With us now is Dan Gaynor, Vice President of Business and Culture for the Washington, D.C.-based Media Research Council. Dan, welcome to Washington Watch.
It's a pleasure. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I trust you are, too. Set us up here. I'm going to turn you loose a bit. There's a lot of hype over this Rachel Maddow deal. Some are equating it to Geraldo Rivera's opening of Al Capone's vault. Is the hype justified? Was she justified? Did this thing have any teeth? Or are we dealing with dentures here? What's the issue?
She embarrassed herself. She overhyped something. I mean, she had said, hey, we've got the top two pages of Trump's taxes. We'll be able to tell you a little bit, but there's not a lot there. In reality, not only did they overhype it, they got the numbers wrong. There's a whole big mess. And the result was the amazing thing. Here's someone, Rachel Maddow, was being lionized in the press, spent days of New York Times, Washington Post, Hollywood Reporter, Huffington Post, AP, all doing these wonderful stories about Rachel because her ratings were up. And so, she's the queen of the resistance now, and that's the way they depicted her. And so everybody was queued up to watch this. Left wing, right wing, journalists, everybody. And they were all disappointed. The only people who were defending her were people at her own network. Even CNBC executive editor was out there saying that Donald Trump had a big win thanks to Rachel Maddow.
All right. The White House blasted the release of the return as illegal. But Johnson and others argues that the reporting on the unsolicited documents is perfectly legal under the First Amendment. And some are suggesting that the Trump administration actually leaked it on purpose. Do you have any inside scoop on this for us?
Well, I don't think anybody's sure. The document itself said client copy, but a lot of people had access to that. And there's some theorizing that maybe it came from a previous court case he'd had, or an ex-wife, or something, or maybe just a disgruntled employee. The reality is accountants would have had access to that, employees. Yes. Here's the interesting thing, though. The media want to tell you on any other day that Donald Trump is an idiot, a fool, he's incompetent, he can't handle this job. And then on days where things go well for him, then suddenly he's an evil master genius. Mm. He somehow orchestrated this. He leaked this. It was all Donald Trump. Well, wait a second. You only get one of those. You can either declare Donald Trump stupid, and then if something smart happens, you have to say this goes against your strategy and your opinion, or he's really smart, in which case then all the other stuff drops away. But what they're trying to do is have both, and just anything that matches one of them, they go to. And this goes back to a long-held strategy that the left has been using, going back at least to Reagan. And that is every Republican, every conservative is either crazy, stupid, or evil, or some combination of all three. Reagan, because they said he was senile, he becomes crazy. George H.W. Bush, because he ran the CIA, he's evil. And it just goes on down there from there. It's insane.
And they demonstrate their lack of sincerity by not pursuing any degree of truth in the story. In other words, like you say, they'll spin it one way, they'll spin it the other way, they'll speak out of both sides of their mouths. On one side of their mouth, Donald Trump is an idiot and he's stupid. On the other side, like you said, he's an evil genius. Well, which is it? The point is, even those that disagree with Trump, and I know a lot of people, within the conservative, the Christian community that disagree with much of Donald Trump's past, but those decisions he's making today, most of those people are willing to acknowledge as being for the good of religious freedom, the First Amendment, the Second Amendment, and constitutional rights. And they're acknowledging that even a man that they may disagree with on some issues is doing some things that are right, and they're willing to admit it. Those are the people that I respect for telling the truth, not those that spin everything negative every time they want to just continue to grind their axe.
Well, and that's unfortunately become the media. And that's one of the reasons why so many in the press were upset with Maddow. Dylan Byers from CNN yesterday, one of their media critics, was concerned because he thought that this undermined traditional journalism. Because that's what the media want. The media want somehow a way to take down Donald Trump. And if you say you can do it and then you don't, then what you do is you undermine other attempts. I've never seen a media so concerned with destroying a presidency from day one that they are in this election. And that's what conservatives need to understand, that every action Donald Trump takes, the media and the left are using as an opportunity to impeach him, destroy him, and they're trying very hard to do it.
In 30 to 45 seconds, before we take a break, does this story have legs? Where's it going to go from here?
Oh, the media want to forget this because it was embarrassing to them. So the only legs it has is that Donald Trump earned a lot of money and paid more taxes than anybody really wants to accept. And they'll move on to some new outrage in another couple of minutes.
Dan, thanks so much for joining us on Washington Watch. Really appreciate your contribution and your leadership.
Thank you very much. And I've met some of your students, and they really impressed me. Tell them to apply for internships, sir.
All right. Blessings. We will. I'll take you up on that. Coming up next, we have an open dialogue with Dr. Carol Swain, co-author of Abduction, How Liberalism Steals Our Children's Hearts and Minds. She's a professor from Vanderbilt University. Be right back after this commercial break. Call-in number is 866-372-7234.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Well, we're beginning to see oil inventory numbers come in, and we'll watch that. Right now, it looks like oil supply surprisingly took a pretty significant dip, according to API. Now, we'll watch that, but the number today is probably going to be a little bit more significant. But API says that 531 barrels of crude oil down for the week of March 10th. Now, that's contracted with expectations for an increase of 3.5 million barrels. Also, very interesting, gasoline supplies also showed a dip, a drop of about 4.1 million barrels of other distilled products as well. So very, very interesting as we watch that. At the very same time, we get oil supply data coming out of OPEC saying that this month or last month, I'm sorry, they were 91% compliant with the OPEC deal to cut production, 91% compliant. They also go on to say that they have capacity to be well over 100% compliant, and they expect they will be here in the next couple of months. Saudi Arabia was one that saw a lower than expected production cut for last month. So we'll have to see what happens, but obviously this is impacting oil prices a little bit. They're starting to recover, but I don't expect to see any prolonged recovery in the near future.
Experience Dan Celia in person. Find a faith, family, and finance town hall meeting or seminar near you at afafoundation.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. It's usually with Tony Perkins, but Tony's on a break this afternoon. So this is Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University in Bartlesville, Oklahoma, sitting in for Tony. The call-in number is 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. You know, you can't open up your iPhone, your iPad, look at your laptop, turn on the TV, listen to the radio. You can hardly do so today without seeing some group of students, or perhaps even faculty, wringing their hands, cowering in the corner, acting as if the world is falling apart because they don't like an idea, or they object to a person because the person's ideas are offensive, quote-unquote, to them. They expect to have trigger warnings issued before anybody talks about something that might, quote-unquote, offend them. And I put quotes around these, air quotes around these words, because we've twisted and essentially maligned the very definition of what offense means, of what a trigger means, of what aggression means, of what tolerance means, of what intolerance means, and justice and injustice, and right and wrong, and black and white, and good and evil, and bitter and sweet. As Isaiah warned us, we've turned all of these things upside down, and what we see right now is the total inability of any of our students on our campuses to actually wrestle with a good argument, a good, robust exchange of ideas. We're waiting right now for Dr. Carol Swain to join us, and I don't know whether or not we're going to get her, so I'm going to continue to tell you a little bit about the story that took place last night at Vanderbilt University. Charles Murray, the author of The Bell Curve, back in the 80s, a controversial book and a controversial scholar, was invited to speak at Vanderbilt last night. Now, he was also at Middlebury College earlier this past week. Maybe it was late last week. I may have my dates wrong there. But as a result of being at Middlebury, the students erupted in a violent attack on free speech when Dr. Murray spoke at the college. In fact, the host, his faculty host at Middlebury, was actually physically accosted before the end of this particular protest, and her hair was pulled and her neck was wrenched as a result of the students being so angry that their safety had been compromised by inviting somebody such as Dr. Murray to the campus. Well, you might want to ask yourself this logical and rhetorical question, or maybe even the students that attacked this sponsoring faculty member and the guest speaker, Dr. Murray, how safe do you think they felt? How safe did Dr. Murray feel when these students were rushing him and actually rocking the car in which he sat while he was trying to drive away. How safe do you think the faculty member that sponsored him felt when her hair was grabbed and her neck was wrenched by this angry crowd? These students call for safe spaces, but they do anything but honor the true definition of safety by treating others with courtesy and granting them the same things that they themselves demand. You know, this snowflake rebellion that's running across our campuses is, quite frankly, frightening. It's frightening because in the name of tolerance, these students are anything but tolerant, and they're demonstrating to be the poster child of what intolerance truly is. Under the banner of condemning hate, they demonstrate that they themselves are the most hateful, because they will literally say, I hate those hateful people. I hate people like Dr. Charles Murray. I hate people like Ben Stein. I hate people like Ben Shapiro. I hate people like Michael Levine. I hate people like Rush Limbaugh or Rod Dreher or anybody else who has an idea that might make me feel uncomfortable. What happened to open, robust debate? What happened to open dialogue? What happened to the true classical liberal arts? Like I've challenged you before when I've spoken on this program, the liberal arts university was a university that was established to liberate us, to educate a free man and a free woman, a free society, to educate people in what it meant to be classically liberal, meaning those people that enjoyed freedom. And what we see right now at Middlebury, what we see right now at other institutions across the land, whether it be Vanderbilt, whether it be Yale, whether it be Dartmouth or Brown, is students actually cowering in the corner and asking for teddy bears and puppy dogs and bubbles because they're offended. We've got a couple minutes left in this segment. I don't know if we'll be able to hold her over into the next, but Dr. Carol Swain, who is a professor of political science and law at Vanderbilt University, is here to join us right now. Dr. Swain, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for joining me. I'm very grateful that you have. I'd like you to comment on the situation. We've got a couple minutes in this segment. If you can hold over into the next, that'd be great. But
yes.
Charles Murray was on your campus last night. How did it go?
It was a very quiet affair, but it was because the campus police and the organizers worked to keep everything low-key. We had wristbands. They checked a list of names against anyone that was allowed to enter the room. And so it was a great affair, except, you know, he was preaching to the choir. We missed the exchange of ideas that would normally happen on a university campus if you had people that were in the audience that might disagree a little bit, that would ask questions that might be probing or challenging. That was not there because we were in a room of like-minded people.
All right, Dr. Swain, can you stay with me during the commercial break and join us on the other side? We're going to take a commercial break right now then. After we hear a couple of our sponsors, Dr. Swain will help walk us through some of this loss of academic freedom and this ideological fascism that seems to be prevailing in our colleges and universities within the United States. This is Dr. Everett Piper sitting in for Tony Perkins. The call-in number is 866-372-7234. We'll be right back in a couple minutes.
Whoa, we have not had a response like this before. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. We've been doing these spiritual heritage tours for like 20 years. We're sold out for June already, if you can believe that. We've got space left on our September tours of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon, and then Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. We call them spiritual heritage tours, and I don't know how long these September seats will last. To what do you attribute that to, someone might ask? Maybe it's the fact that we have a new person occupying the White House. Maybe that has something to do with it. But in any event, we welcome you to come with us on our September Spiritual Heritage Tour of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon and Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. Those are two separate trips. You can do both, or you can do one or the other. We'd love to have you. Go to spiritualheritagetours.com. spiritualheritagetours.com.
Join Norman Geisler, Richard Land, Michael Brown, Frank Turek, and others for Southern Evangelical Seminary's National Conference on Christian Apologetics. It's October 13th and 14th in Charlotte, North Carolina. Enjoy informative talks, a live debate, and a dialogue with Ken Ham from Answers in Genesis. Plus, there's the premiere of the American Family Association documentary, The God Who Speaks. Register by May 1st and receive a special gift. Visit ses.edu for details.
Physicians keep learning after medical school in order to better save lives. Shouldn't Christian leaders keep learning to better save souls? Hi, I'm Dr. John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi, and online around the world. Are you a Christian leader who thinks it's important to keep learning? WBS online weekend and evening classes allow graduate students to become better equipped to make disciples in a constantly changing world. For more information, visit wbs.edu.
Dan Celia of Financial Issues.
You know, there's probably never been a more important time in our economy to be thinking about a charitable gift annuity. I hope you'll do that just to shore up, to firm up some more income, permanent income, income that you can count on for the rest of your life while you're doing the Lord's work. A charitable gift annuity has been something I've been talking about for 25 years. Finally, we're seeing even mainstream start to get on board with the merits of charitable gift annuities. I hope you'll consider it. You can call the AFA Foundation. Someone there will help you work through the details and find out whether you qualify for a charitable gift annuity.
Call and speak with a representative of the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University in Bartlesville, Oklahoma, sitting in for Tony on Washington Watch. We've got Dr. Carol Swain from Vanderbilt University with us again. We had her on. She was gracious enough to join me in an earlier segment that we had just a week or so ago. Dr. Swain, before we get back into the conversation with regard to Charles Murray, the bell curve, him speaking at Vanderbilt, and your reaction to the whole scenario, I just want to put a little plug in again. 866-372-7234. Dr. Swain, can you stay with us the entire 15-minute segment?
Yes, I can.
Okay. I may take a couple callers, and you and I can decide how to respond to that. I'll probably toss the ball to you if you wish in answering some
That'll
of these calls.
Fine.
Okay. So if you want to call in, listeners, 866-372-7234. The topic right now is academic freedom. I'm going to spin it to the negative and suggest that it's ideological fascism, because if you don't submit, if you don't agree, if you don't comply, if you're not part of the common bond of ideas that the progressive left holds, then so often today you are expelled, you're silenced, you're sequestered, you're not welcome, you're protested, and there's anything but an open and honest, robust debate where disagreement can be had in the pursuit of truth, as the classical liberal arts university stood for. Dr. Swain, I've made the argument that it's really the conservative today who's really the classical liberal, because we believe in liberty and liberation and a free and open debate and honest exchange of ideas, because we trust the conservation of truth to be the judge of the debate, not power, not politics, not protests, but truth. Your response?
I would agree with that. And I would also say that on today's college campuses, and it's not particular to anyone, you see some of this taking place at Christian universities as well. The conservative voices are drowned out, and part of that is because the people who control the top positions in the administration, they tend to be more liberal. And I don't believe that most campuses are composed of a majority of liberals. I believe that liberals hold key strategic positions, and that is what is standing in the way of the free flow of ideas and everything that we have associated, you know, with Western civilization. That that move that's taken place, it's across the country, and it has to do with the fact that people who are more conservative have lost control, and unfortunately, a lot of us, the ones that are public are over 60, over age 60.
Well, it is. I'm going to push a little here. You can dodge and you can put the ball back in my court if you wish, but as a conservative professor at Vanderbilt University, how free do you feel? How are you treated?
I mean, I've always done my own thing, and so I have seized freedom when maybe it didn't exist. But I have made the decision to take early retirement, and it was my decision because I would like to, you know, spend the rest of my life, you know, doing things that I feel will make a difference for the broader issues. And so instead of being confined to one university, I would like to have access to many universities and young people across the country because I believe they are the only ones that can change this current climate. Their parents have some influence, but it has to be the young people themselves. And right now the conservatives feel so intimidated, they seem to forget that they're paying the same tuition dollars as every other student. They have rights too. And so I would like to see more of those students who are they're disgruntled, they are pressed, they're not going to ask for a safe space, they're not going to call campus police. They're out there. I'd like to see them begin to stand up, get some backbone, and push back and demand their rights.
Spot on as far as I'm concerned. I know as the president of a university, when I wrote the my op-ed that went viral a little over a year ago, titled "This Is Not a Daycare, It's a University," where I challenged this this snowflake rebellion, this selfishness, this narcissism that's prevalent in our culture today, where all of our students, and unfortunately many of the faculty, expect to be coddled rather than confronted. They expect to be they expect to feel safe in their little comfort zones. I even used the analogy of C.S. Lewis's Great Lion Aslan, where Lewis tells us that the great lion is not safe, but he's good. And I suggested that the great lion of the liberal arts, the great lion of the academy, is not supposed to be safe, but it should be good. There's a difference between goodness and safety. And thank you for challenging people to get a backbone and to get some courage and to run into the face of the storm rather than away from it. I do have one caller, Matthew from Oklahoma. Are you with me? And if so, welcome to Washington Watch.
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call. And I've always appreciated the show. I'm actually a teacher, and I don't teach at a college level. I teach at a junior high. And I have a liberal arts degree. I studied English, writing, music, and art. And I wanted to, my comment or question would be, you know, I've watched the documentaries a little bit. They're from the 60s where all these guys were out. And ladies, the Clintons of the day, and they were arguing and burning flags and everything else. And draft cards and talking about free speech. And yet today, it seems that when that free speech is exercised, they want to put handcuffs on anybody that doesn't agree with them. So I want to, you know, where's the disconnect? And the other thing I want to say is I appreciate what she's saying. Catch your name.
Dr. Swain,
thank you, man, for what you're saying. And I'm encouraged by that. And, you know, my students ask me questions at times. I just try to speak from my heart and exercise my First Amendment right to speak whatever I think. And a lot of times they're very receptive. You know, they're just kids. But at the same time, that's the generation that's coming up. And I think as a teacher, that's kind of why God's put me where I'm at. And anyway, thank you.
All right. Thank you, Matt,
well,
for your comments.
Thank you. And I believe that a lot of us, what we're called to do is advise leaders. And those leaders are the students in our classrooms. They're going to be the future leaders, whether they're in middle school, high school, or college, and we can share our wisdom with those who are receptive. And as far as the 1960s, if you read Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals, and you know the background of the book, he watched those students that were acting out at the 1968 Democratic Convention, and he advised them to cut their hair, take a bath, clean yourself up, and go inside the system. And so that's what happened, is that the radicals of the 1960s infiltrated, they used deception, they used manipulation to rise to the top. And as soon as they started gaining power, very quickly, they began to shut down everyone else's free speech.
And Dr. Swain, thank you for bringing up Rules for Radicals and Alinsky. I was reading just last week and refreshing my memory on this a bit, that one of Alinsky's principles for radicals, one of his rules for radicals that Barack Obama followed as well as Hillary Clinton and many on the left, was the principle of compromise, where Alinsky himself said, ask for 100%, and when you get 30, you've got 30% more than what you had in the first place. Wouldn't you agree that that would be a good rule for conservatives to follow today as we engage in the battle, engage in the debate, engage in the argument in the market square of ideas? Go in with confidence asking for 100%, but count it a success when you gain 30% more ground than you had in the first place.
I think that's true as long as it doesn't compromise, you know, biblical values and principles. And there, I believe, Christians have compromised too much. And as a consequence, that's why we're in the situation we are. And I think that somehow we have allowed the secularists to push us in a corner where we debate, we do everything around their rules. And I believe that was a mistake. And compromise, you know, legislation, there's some legislation where you should compromise, but when it comes to biblical values, I believe we've already given up too much.
Thank you for that clarification. Agree 100%. You compromise on things that are not biblically mandated, but if it's clear in Scripture, for example, marriage, there is no compromise on marriage. There's no compromise on the definition of life. There's nothing in Scripture that says you have the right to define life and that God doesn't. There's nothing in Scripture that says a sacrament of the church, marriage, should be co-opted by the government and dumbed down to something that is clearly antithetical to God's ways. We have another caller waiting for us right now. His name is Rod. I believe you're from Missouri. Welcome to Washington Watch.
Oh, thank you guys for taking my call. This is an awesome conversation, and I just could not resist the temptation to call in about it. I had to tell a little bit of my story, but also to raise an interesting comment about something Dr. Swain said. So a little over 10 years ago, I was in a doctoral program. I'm a psychologist. I was in a doctoral program in psychology, and this culture that you guys are talking about almost got me kicked out of my doctoral program simply because I'm a conservative. And conservatives don't fit very well in the field of psychology. And so even though I had a 4.0 GPA and I was above reproach in every conceivable way, because I didn't hold the party line values about how we ought to respond to homosexuality or religious freedom or whatever it may happen to be, I was on academic probation, if you can imagine the irony of that. The thing that tipped me off, though, that made me really want to call is something that Dr. Swain said about the rights of conservative students paying the same tuition dollars and, you know, ultimately holding the same rights in the university. Very recently, I was a professor in a local university and also working in the college counseling center there. And even though I think that conceptually that's true, I don't think pragmatically it actually is. I think that conservative students are treated differently. I think that in terms of their clubs and organizations, and that the types of treatment that they receive in the classroom from peers and professors, I don't think it is the same. I don't think that they actually pragmatically have the same rights. You know, having
I mean, you're right. They don't have the same rights, and that's the point. The students need to rise up and demand to be treated fairly, and they need to use another one of Saul Alinsky's principles, which is make your opponent live up to their rule book. And so they argue all this stuff about diversity and fairness and, you know, equality when they don't practice it. I think conservative students and parents need to point out the hypocrisy. They need to start demanding conservative professors, and they need to enlist other students that may not be conservative, but students who would like to have exposure to diverse viewpoints.
Dr. Swain, do you find that it's true that when these conservative students that may feel like they're in the minority and may feel intimidated and somewhat fearful to raise their voice, do you know for a fact that there are some professors such as yourself standing in the background waiting to defend them and waiting to support them and waiting to have their back?
I don't know that there are people that are standing in the background waiting to support them, but I know that on some of the issues that have affected me, I have gotten support from liberal colleagues, and there are, you know, classical liberals that still exist that may be secular humanists and atheists that they operate on principles. And so I think that we have more allies than we sometimes realize. And so for the students, it's going to be an act of courage, just like the courage that was called for during the Civil Rights Movement. But we do need students who are going to be willing to stand up on principle. Hopefully God will raise up some leaders that are charismatic enough that they will be able to articulate a vision that other students will follow.
Okay, thank you. We've got one more caller here, Charles from Missouri. Charles, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great, Charles. What's your question?
I was wondering, should we bring a definition for the words that they're using wrong and a Bible with us, or a track or something like that when we're talking to these people? Because it seems like they're reading these definitions, and then anyone that's Christian or has a secular point of view is pretty much like you're talking about. They're outcast.
Well, first of all, they're not interested in what our tracks have to say or even the definition of words, because they've turned words upside down. If you really want to understand the liberal mind, you need to read George Orwell's 1984, and that would give you a good, firm basis for understanding what's taking place in our society. And I would recommend Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals, George Orwell's 1984, and Cleon Skousen's The Naked Communist, and pay attention to the 45 current communist goals that were in the appendix of his book, written in 1949, and you can understand this society and the direction it has gone in, where it is today. And I think some of those Saul Alinsky tactics can be used by conservatives to turn things around.
I would add, and I think you might agree with me, Dr. Swain, Huxley's Brave New World, which would be added to that list of books that we should be reading. If we want to understand what the left and what the progressive agenda is actually doing in our culture, Huxley was prophetic, even though he was not a believer. And then there's another contemporary book. I don't know if you've stumbled across it or not, Dr. Swain. It's 10 Books That Screwed Up the World by Benjamin Weicker.
Yes, I have read that book, and and it's a short read, and I highly recommend it as well.
And I've got one other book I think they ought to be reading. It's titled Abduction: How Liberalism Steals Our Children's Hearts and Minds. You want to give
well,
me an overview
so
of that?
Plugging that book, and maybe we need a list on a website somewhere where people that really want to educate themselves to what's taking place in this culture, we can post things and they can go and get ammunition.
Indeed. A good reading list is always helpful. And I think that's the moral of your story right now. You've encouraged, perhaps intentionally or unintentionally, people to do their homework. You've got to do a little, you've got to muscle up. You've got to get ready for the debate. And if you're soft and lazy sitting in your lazy boy chair, you're not going to be able to get in the game and accomplish much. Dr. Swain,
that's right.
Thank you so much for taking time again to join me on Washington Watch. It's always my honor and privilege.
Thank you. Bye.
Blessings to you. This has been Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, this afternoon on Washington Watch. If you want a great Christian university, go to www.okwu.edu, where we stand for the primacy of Jesus Christ, the priority of Scripture, the pursuit of truth, and the practice of wisdom. Thank you for listening this afternoon. Keep up the good fight. Remember
Washington
that Christ Washington is in your corner.
Is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.